Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
This is Tracy.
This is Samantha.
This is The Suspended Sentence.
Grab your latte and join us as we enter season two, starting January 1st of 2024.
A year packed full of serial killers that you may or may not have ever heard of.
Thanks for being there.
Stay safe.
Hello, this is Michelle, the host of Haunted Moonlight, a Podmoth Network podcast. If you are like me and enjoy anything and everything spooky, then this podcast is for you. New episodes drop every Sunday and are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, and iHeartRadio. Can't wait to keep it spooky with you.
Welcome back, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Good to see you again.
Yes. Nice to see you, Declan. Nice to hear you as well.
Yes.
So what story do you have for us today?
Today, I'm going to be talking about the Maury Island incident. What are you going to be telling us about?
I am going to be doing a brutal story, but it's not how I typically tell a brutal story. It's not like about a specific incident. It's a it's a brutal thing that I'm going to be talking about. That is a torture method.
Oh.
Yeah, because torture's brutal and nobody wants it. So. Yeah.
This is going to be a rough episode, I think.
Is it? Oh.
Well, mine's not crazy, but that sounds awful.
Yeah. Yeah. So to go with this story, I brought the Chelsea cocktail, which the reason I brought it will come to light a little bit later in the story. But the Chelsea cocktail is 3/4 of an ounce of bourbon, 1 teaspoon of blackberry brandy, 2 teaspoons of lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of orange liqueur, and 1 ounce of dry vermouth, which I've never had before.
Interesting.
So the steps are to add all the ingredients into a cocktail shaker with ice, shake well, and strain into a cocktail glass, and garnish with a lemon twist. So are you ready for this?
Yes, let's give it a try.
It smells gross. It smells nasty.
Ugh, the fuck? Mm-hmm. That's weird.
So
I'm not a huge fan of that.
I learned, because I had to go look up the difference between dry vermouth and sweet vermouth to see if I had to buy dry vermouth. And I learned that they are made from different things and they are different colors. And it's very winey with the vermouth in there.
Yeah,
and I don't like wine.
The brandy makes it.
Yeah.
Brandy's fucking gross. Brandy's
well, I was hoping shit. Because it's blackberry brandy, maybe it would be a little sweeter, a little fruitier. I don't taste any fruit. It just tastes like dry wine to me with a little hint of bourbon.
Yeah, it's not a good drink.
Nope, not a fan. Don't need to do that again. Cool. Yeah, not a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, have you heard of the term the Glasgow smile?
Isn't that like the Joker?
Yes, it is like the Joker. So,
yes, I have heard of it.
Yes.
I don't know the details of it, though.
Well, you're going to find out. And I didn't really know the details behind, like, the origin of it either. I was reading a book. I don't even remember what book I was reading, and they mentioned it in there. It was, like, something of a character happening to a character. And I went, what was the origin of that? And why is it called the Glasgow smile? So I fell into a rabbit hole and decided that I would bring the rabbit hole to the podcast, because why not? Okay. It fits perfectly. So it actually ties in with one of our early episodes, all the way back to episode 21, but I'm going to discuss that in more specifics later. The Glasgow smile is a torture method that goes back to Scotland, thus the name Glasgow smile. Even though a smile is in the name.
Pin that on Russia. Glasgow? I guess that's Glasgow.
You're thinking Moscow. This is Glasgow, Scotland.
Oopsies.
Whoops. You can cut that out if you want.
I'll leave it. Okay.
Even though a smile is in the name, it definitely is not friendly. What makes it the smile is that the victim is inflicted with deep cuts from the corners of the mouth up towards the ear. These cuts were often so brutal that it caused the victim to scream, which only further increased the tissue damage and the scarring afterwards. It has other names, which might be less well known, but are the same thing, like the Cheshire grin. I don't know why it's also called a buck 50. I don't know. And the Chelsea smile, to name a few, which is why I brought the drink, the Chelsea, but I probably should have looked for something better since this drink was garbage.
So I'm looking at some pictures of it right now. I was expecting it to look more like the Joker, but it goes like almost along the jawline, it looks like.
No, it goes from the corner of the mouth. Look up
The one I'm looking at right now. It like, instead of going straight up like the Joker, it's like connected to the ear, closer to the jawline.
I think it depends on how they're cut. We're going to talk about some people. Yeah. We're going to talk about some people that were given the Glasgow smile. One of them is a famous actor.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right now. It looks weird.
Since this was a torture method from Scotland, it made me think of medieval tortures that took place in and across European countries, like those shown prominently in the movie Braveheart, which loved that movie. The time period of that Scottish and English war was in the 13th century. So for me, I just assumed like, oh yeah, this is an old torture method, but no. This also ties back because it reminded me of the episode that we did on Chillingham Castle back in episode 37, where we talked about some really gross torture methods that happened in that castle. Long time ago. This particular method of torture surprised me because it originated more recently than what I had assumed, and it dates back to the 1900s. Instead of the 1200s, even though it wasn't a medieval torture, it certainly could have been. The Glasgow smile was invented. That is such a weird thing to say, that a torture method was invented. But it was invented and made popular in the 1920s in the poorer neighborhoods of Glasgow. This city was once a smaller town, but during Scotland's Industrial Revolution, many people moved to Glasgow and soon made it the biggest city in the country. People were drawn to the many factories and dockyards that were opening in the city because they needed jobs, and Glasgow suddenly had jobs. Since it had previously been a small town, there wasn't adequate housing for the massive influx of people, so many of the newcomers were relegated to small tenement regions with poor housing and high crime. So when you pack a lot of people into a small area and they don't have a lot of money, bad shit starts to happen, and that's what happened in this case, not surprisingly. Unfortunately, it led to the rise in gangs, who often used razors as their weapon of choice, a group of criminal organizations that operated mainly on the south side and east side of the city were often referred to as the Glasgow Razor Gangs because they used razors. Right. Not very original in the naming, but, you know, hey, you work with what you got. But razors weren't the only weapons used. Sometimes they used a work knife, like a utility blade or something, or broken glass, which probably left even worse scars, would be my thought. Because you're using a janky, broken piece of glass to cut. But torture methods were often used to inflict maximum pain before death. This technique served a different purpose. Although victims could have certainly died from it, most and many survived the technique to have significant scarring that they would wear for the rest of their lives. The severe and noticeable scars would identify them as someone who had gone against one of the gangs. Might have begun with gang activity, but it wasn't isolated to them. There was a fascist politician in the 1920s who received the smile treatment. His name was William Joyce, and he was an American with Irish heritage. He became involved in the Irish War of Independence. In 1924, while acting as a member of the security force for the Conservative Party politicians, he was attacked from behind and given half a smile on the right side of his face. So they only cut the right side. The scarring followed him into World War II when he supported the Nazis.
It's just rough. Like, they're not even like holding you down. You don't even know you're getting tortured. They just run up and cut your cheek open.
Yeah, that's. Ugh. I mean, that's what happened to this guy. They didn't know who did it either because he got grabbed from behind.
Jesus.
Like I said, he supported the Nazis. He was not great, and he was eventually hanged for being a traitor. Another notable victim in the 1920s of the torture technique was a child, 4-year-old Billy Gaffney. Yeah, this get dark. Nice. Obviously, he wasn't a victim of a political movement or even a gang, but a victim of much worse. Billy was the second victim of your old friend, who we hate so much, Albert Fish. This is the link to our older episode that I mentioned before. That was episode 21. We talked about what a horrible piece of garbage Albert Fish was.
Well, that guy, not cool.
No. And I don't remember if you brought it up during that episode. I could have gone back and listened to it again, but I kind of didn't want to because listening to it the first time was traumatic enough. Y'all can
skip over that one. It was fucked up, guy.
He was awful. Fish actually confessed to giving Billy the Glasgow smile as well as cutting off parts of his body. And I'm not going to go into details because it was gross. Even though the gangs were mostly dismantled in Glasgow by the end of the 1930s, the technique didn't entirely disappear, and it made its appearance from time to time. It was seen again in 1947 in a murder victim of Elizabeth Short, also a commonly referred to, she was commonly referred to as the Black Dahlia.
Oh, okay.
We haven't discussed this case yet. Anyway, I mean, you know, we always could. But I don't know if we will because it's unsolved. And I hate unsolved things.
I've looked into that case before. It seems like not that big a deal. Like, with crimes we see nowadays, like...
Well, okay, so here's the thing.
Like, She's just a random body that got dumped on someone's lawn or some shit, right?
She was a young aspiring actress living in Los Angeles. She was given the smile, but that's not likely what killed her. She'd actually been cut in half at the waist. So her naked and mutilated body had been found in a vacant field. I mean, it's interesting, but again, it's unsolved. Which I hate. Because, you know, if it was unsolved and it happened 10 years ago, I'd be holding out some hope. But it was, you know, 80 years ago.
Shit, right?
1945, I think. 47. 40s, okay. 47. So it's a long time ago. I don't think they're going to figure it out.
No.
There were over 150 suspects, but unfortunately it wasn't solved, as I said. In the 1970s, there was a resurgence of the torture technique by another group organization, but in England this time. This group, the Chelsea Headhunters, wasn't a traditional gang, but definitely acted like one. That's where it got its second, one of its alternate names, the Chelsea Smile or the Chelsea Grin. The Chelsea Headhunters were a group of people who were known for being racist white supremacists, who also happened to support the Chelsea Football Club in London, or soccer for us Americans, because we have to give it our own name. But they supported the Chelsea Football Club. And during the 70s and 80s, there was a phenomenon going on known as football hooliganism in the UK and other European countries, which I did not know about.
Sounds fucking stupid. I'm excited to hear this explanation.
Yeah.
Football hooliganism. That's the most British thing I've ever heard.
Good point. Good point.
Sounds like Joe Biden speaking.
Okay.
Goddamn hooligans.
Right. When I hear football hooliganism, I think like they were TPing houses and, you know, knocking over trash cans. But no, they went on like violent rampages related to wins and losses of their football team. It wasn't just the Chelsea like Headhunters. What's that?
Like a riot? Like what kind of violence are we talking about? Like have they just breaking random businesses' windows and shit?
They were giving people a Glasgow smile.
Based on wins and losses?
Jesus Christ. They're psycho.
They just find some random fan of the other team in the parking lot and like, you're coming with us.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's fucked
up.
Over soccer? Come on, folks.
Yes.
Over I get soccer. If you're like a Raiders fan, but come on.
The group still exists today, but in the 70s and 80s, they were known for using the smile technique in many of their assaults, which caused the slight change in the name to the Chelsea Grin or the Chelsea Smile. The contentious football matches often resulted in brawls between the supporters of each team. Chelsea Headhunters were notorious for using the cutting technique on the other team's fans. Because... That's how seriously we have to take any sport is to assault the other
sports
team's
fans. Are fucking weird.
They
like
are.
Like
if you're
that
diehard
sports
that's
fan, like that's breaking TVs and shit. And like, I never understood that. I guess I never really followed sports that closely, but
not that much.
Still is fucking weird.
It's crazy. So remember I mentioned an actor. There's a famous actor also known for the scars across his face, Tommy Flanagan. He is a Scottish actor known for his roles in the movies like Braveheart and Gladiator, as well as his performances in the long-running show Sons of Anarchy, which I haven't watched. Have you watched Sons of Anarchy?
No, it seemed dumb to me, but I do have a story in the books regarding the Sons of Anarchy and an actor that ended up killing someone.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. But I'm looking at this guy right now There's no chance in hell that he could play anything other than a villain with that fucking scar on his face.
Well, okay, so I guess depending on if you're English or Scottish, in Braveheart, I think he was basically a good guy.
Depending on...
I mean, it's true. In his 20s, he worked as a DJ. When he was 25, he was assaulted in a knife fight outside of a club where he was given the cuts to his face as well as numerous stab wounds that nearly led to his death. This assault is what brought him to acting because his friends were like, hey, maybe you shouldn't do that DJ stuff anymore and go try something that might not kill you. I don't know. Apparently DJing could lead to people. It
looks like he only has the scar on one side of his face. It's really on both sides. From the photos.
I'm pretty sure it's on both sides.
Oh, yeah. It's just all fucked up on one side. Okay. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
So it's all hard to see behind his facial hair, but.
Right.
Yeah. It's all lopsided. One side is connected to the mouth and the other one looks like it's trying to.
Right. It's brutal. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it originated in the 1920s, but obviously the technique still exists to this day. And unfortunately, there are still victims being given the Glasgow smile. But that is my story.
Yeah, he looked like he'd play a good Bond villain.
Probably.
I mean, that's got to be invaluable to some directors because it's like you don't have to spend 4 hours in makeup getting a fake scar. Like, he's got the actual scars.
He's got it. I didn't realize that he was in Sons of Anarchy because I've never really paid attention to that show, but I kind of want to see it. Because I think he's a really good actor and I liked him in Braveheart and in Gladiator and other things I've seen him in. I think he does a good job. So I'd be curious to see. I think in Sons of Anarchy, he might be a bad guy, but I have no idea. So if any listeners out there who want to.
He looks like the perfect actor for Inglourious Basterds, like playing a Nazi.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. I can see that. I
freaking love that movie. If you guys haven't seen that movie, go watch it. It's amazing.
Don't skip ahead to the chaser. You got to tell us your story.
It's
first.
A little pre-chaser. Just a pre-chaser.
Okay. All right. Okay. Tell us this island story.
So this is a little quick story because it's kind of hard to find information on it that's credible. But it was midday on June 21st, 1947, and Harold Dahl was boating around the bay near Maury Island, Washington, when he noticed something weird. Harold was on the boat with his 15-year-old son, their dog, and two crewmen. Up above their boat, they spotted six large donut-shaped crafts hovering overhead.
Uh-oh.
He noticed that one of the crafts was dropping what looked like newspapers and eventually lava rocks.
What?
From the center of the craft, yeah. So, like, it started with a flutter of this, like, paper. It looked like shreds of newspaper.
Okay.
Like, you know how paper flutters, like, yeah. Down to the ground?
Yeah.
And then right after that, like a bunch of heavier objects fell straight down that he described as lava rocks.
Weird.
As the objects fluttered and fell down to earth, some of which landed on his boat, injuring his crewmate and, sorry everybody, but killing his family.
No.
Dog.
No. What was it? Was it actually lava rock?
We'll get there.
You're gonna get there? Okay. Sorry.
Oh, we'll get there.
No spoilers.
So the newspaper trimmings that Harold saw was actually a very lightweight, malleable metal similar to what was seen in the Roswell crash.
Of course.
So, yeah. And it was around the same time, like I think Roswell was in 48, I want to say. Let me see.
I don't remember.
Let's see. 1947, yeah. So I think that's the same year. Yes, 1947. So
okay.
Harold took photos of the craft and some of the debris. And the following day, Harold was visited by an unidentified man in a black suit who seemed to know everything about Harold's experience.
Men in black suits.
Yes, this is the first instance of men in black being mentioned. And there's multiple other ones with, like, some even being caught on, like, security cameras and shit.
Yeeks.
Yeah. So the man in black threatened Harold and warned him not to speak about this with anyone. However, he had already given the photos and the debris to his boss, Fred Chrisman, who ventured out to the island to see for himself. So, like, when he pulled up to the island, all this shit that fell out of the UFO was sitting in the water, like
just floating.
Yeah, just like
debris. Okay.
Yeah, like when there's like fires and shit, you'll see stuff floating in like a river or something. Like,
yeah,
just like random gunk in there.
Were they dropping it over the island or over the water?
They dropped it over his boat.
Okay, so over the water.
In the water, that's where boats are, but
usually.
Most of it ended up in the water.
Gotcha. Okay.
With some of it landing on his boat. Several days later, a private pilot named Kenneth Arnold was flying in the area when he saw a string of 9 UFOs flying past Mount Rainier going an estimated 1,200 miles an hour.
Whoo!
Which, that's fast. That's like twice as fast as planes go.
That's fast for 1947.
Yeah. I think planes go like 500 miles an hour or something like that.
Wow.
So after word of his story got around, Kenneth was contacted by Raymond Palmer, who was a reporter. Raymond told Kenneth about Harold's story and suggested the two men speak to see if they saw the same crafts, because it was only like 4 days after the incident with Harold that Kenneth saw those UFOs.
Mm.
So, Raymond... Oh, I already... So, Harold... Or, sorry, Arnold went down to speak with Harold. He got a hotel room. And after Arnold saw the objects, he contacted Lieutenant Frank Brown of Military Intelligence. Frank and Captain William L. Davidson arrived at Arnold's hotel to examine and collect the objects as well as conduct some interviews with witnesses. The two men finished their interviews and hopped on the plane to bring the collected objects to a military base for a deeper inspection. However, their plane crashed outside of Kelso, Washington, killing both men and causing the loss of the objects.
Oh.
Yeah, so they never got to fucking examine what was in it. This caused an official FBI investigation into Harold's claims. When interviewed by the FBI, Harold was quoted as saying, if questioned by the authorities, he was going to say it was a hoax because he did not want any further trouble over the matter. And this was from the FBI, or not the FBI, the man in black, who said, if you speak about this with anyone, he threatened his family and his
telling me faked it
safety. Yeah.
Ooh, creepy.
So it's been labeled as a hoax since then because of the quote that the FBI got from him saying, like, I don't want to talk to anybody about this because I just want to be safe. I don't want my family to get killed. I already lost my dog.
Yeah. Weird.
Super freaky. But that is the very first instance of men in black being found.
Interesting.
Yeah. Super weird. A little short story.
Yeah, we should do more on men in black.
Yeah, I got some good ones in the bank, but
okay.
It's It's in Puget Sound, so if we're ever in Washington, we should go check it out, because I guess they have, like, a really big mural depicting the whole thing, like, the whole situation, like, a boat with, like, I've seen a picture of it. The mural looks pretty cool. It's like a boat with a UFO over it dropping shit, and it looks pretty cool.
Ew, I don't like it.
It'd be cool to post for our... Yeah, I don't like it either.
It would be. We're going to have to go on a road trip. Or if any of our listeners are up in that area or have any pictures of the mural, please send them to us. Instagram,
email. If you live near Maury Island in the Puget Sound, send us a DM or something.
Yeah. Wow.
Because there's, like, it's one thing to look at a picture of a mural, but it's another thing to see it in person when it's, like, on the side of a building. Because there's a really cool mural in Springfield, Oregon, of the Simpsons. And it's got, like, every character of the Simpsons on it. It's because Simpsons is based in Springfield. But
Springfield. But we don't know what state. Because every state has a Springfield.
Yeah.
Funny.
Well, do you have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser, and it is a watch recommendation. It is a movie called 10 Years, and it has some pretty good actors in it. It has Chris Pratt and Channing Tatum, but it's basically a group of friends that go to their 10-year reunion, and they get some hijinks and do some wild shit. And it's kind of fun.
Sweet. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. What's your chaser?
So my chaser is a radio show / podcast. I listen to it in podcast form, but it's produced by Sirius. It's like a radio talk show.
Okay.
It's called The Bonfire with Big J Okerson and Robert Kelly. Robert Kelly is one of my, like, favorite comedians of recently, and it's just fun to hear him talk with Big J. Like, Big J is also really funny. They're both just, like, really funny dudes, and they just bullshit about random stuff, and they post like almost every day because they're, like, a live radio show, so they're broadcasting every day, and then they'll take, like, usually 30 minutes to an hour of their radio show and post it on Spotify as a podcast. So it's kind of fun to just listen to that. And I've been binging that recently at work because they have so much stuff out because they post every day.
Right. That's cool. I hadn't heard of that one before.
Yeah, I think I did Robert Kelly's special as a previous chaser, but if you haven't watched that yet, go watch Robert Kelly's Killbox. I think you have to watch it on some weird shit like punchup.live or something like that. But it's free. Just sign up with your email and then you can stream it. But he's a funny motherfucker.
Cool.
He's like a more crass John Panette. You remember that guy?
Oh God, I loved him.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Amazing. Yeah, I love John Panette.
Those, like, whale of comics are my favorite.
Yeah.
Because they just make fun of, like, themselves being fat.
Right. I love the whole, he's just a baby part of John Panette's. My God.
Him at SeaWorld. coming out of the water slide and it looks like SeaWorld.
Yes. I love that. So
John
good.
Panette's really funny. I wish he didn't die.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that wraps it up. I beat you to it.
A little short episode, but...
Yeah, not too bad.
We got there.
Definitely.
Thanks for joining us for this ride, everybody. Check us out next week and the weeks prior or previously. Just go check out all of our shows.
Go listen to all our episodes if you haven't binged them now. Yeah. There's plenty.
We've got some real interesting stories, so...
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
number. I don't even know what number this is. I've lost count.
106, I believe.
Something like that.
No, 107.
I don't even know.
107. You're gonna make me go look. I had to go back when I was labeling this one. I had to go back three times. Just go back and look and see what.
Oh, yes. It's 107. You're right.
107. Okay.
Yay, yes. All right.
Yay. All right. Love you, Mom.
Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.